barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Thursday, September 15th. Welcome to Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host, with my co-host, Chris Drew. I apologize. We didn't start right when the clock hit noon because I was reading an article that has me shook. And I don't know if how much you guys follow chess, but there's a chess scandal going on right now. And I'm crying laughing before the show because I can't believe this is a real thing. So some 19-year-old, if you just go on Twitter or Google, like, chess scandal. Some 19-year-old American just beat this grandmaster, chess grandmaster, who is undefeated, never been beaten, and immediately started facing accusations that he cheated. And I'm not sure how this is cheating, but they're accusing him of having vibrating anal beads in during the show or during the chess game. And I don't know how that, like, helps you play chess or how that's cheating, but this is the funniest shit I've ever read, Chris.
I don't know what kind of chess that is, man, but I want no parts of it. Does it, like, stimulate the mind? Or someone buzzing certain plays in their body?
Is it like a performance enhancer? Like, chess players get performancely enhanced by being stimulated anally? I'm so confused. Mm-hmm. What it is. But so I had to leave with that story, Chris, but we got a lot on this show. We're going to talk about the two big matchups this weekend. One of them is not a big matchup, but I'm excited to watch it. That's Nebraska, Oklahoma. Also going to talk about Texas A&M and Miami. Is the U back? Mm-hmm. So drop in the comments right now. Do you think the U is back if they win this game? If Mario Cristobal can beat Jimbo Fisher, is that an indication that the U is trending in the right direction to relevancy? Are they back? The U. Are they back? That's all I want to know. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing really well. You know, I'm live from the locker today. I'm a true locker boy. I'm doing the show from inside the locker today. So we're just hanging out. You know me, man. Excited. It's almost Saturday, bro. Like, we got tomorrow, big Friday, and then game day again. We're going to talk Ohio State a little bit later today as well. But Zach, the big story that kind of came out, you know, when your boy was sleeping, transfer portal. NCAA regulations, yeah. It feels like they pop their head out every, like, 3 months. NCAA says, hello, we're still in charge.
It's just when you think they can't fuck something up more than they already have, they always, always shock you by making it even worse. So the news, apparently, the rumor is that all NCAA athletes who have entered the transfer portal since August 31st, they have been ordered to withdraw their name because the NCAA is going to implement and enforce new transfer portal windows that won't open until December. So essentially what you've done now is these players that want to jump in the portal before the 4-game mark, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they literally are just going to have to quit the football team, exactly, and not play the rest of the year to save a season and then enter the portal whenever the NCAA says these windows open. But it's just, there's zero notice, planning, any semblance of intelligence as they navigate this horrible situation that they created, right? The NCAA is so incompetent that they created this mass cesspool of kids in this portal out in the middle of space. And now they're, like, closing the portal, but kids are in the portal. Like, they're going to lock kids in the portal, or the kids have to get out of the portal. It's almost like the movie Stranger Things, where you're trying to get everybody out of the portal before the portal closes. It's just right. Just bizarre behavior, bizarre implementation, and just a complete lack of any intelligence at the NCAA level.
And them ordering all 19 Division I football players to leave the portal now, what are they supposed to do? Like, not go back to their school? Quit the team? Like, what are they supposed to do now at this point?
I They that's what they have to do. They have to remove their name from the portal and just quit the football team or tell their coach, like, I'm not playing the rest of the games. I'm leaving in December. It's just, it's bizarre.
Mm-hmm. It is really bizarre. And again, like you mentioned, there was some madness kind of brewing, Zach, for that fourth week, because obviously in the NIL era and the transfer portal era, there was going to be some promises that weren't met, whether it's on the field or in business. I know about three or four teams that were going to see a good amount of people jump into the portal, and now that kind of ruins that plan. So I think now you could end up seeing more and more dysfunction, because if you have guys that want to be in the portal but they can't be in the portal, and they just tell their coach, I want a redshirt this year, so I'm not going to go out there and play, but I still want to be on the team, they're going to cause mass just dysfunction among these college programs, and it's bad.
And once again, it is completely unfair on these kids, right? These mm-hmm. kids that had a plan, like say, all right, I'm going to give this school a shot this year, right? They go through training camp, get into the season, and they're like, damn it, it's still not a good situation for me. I'm going to transfer. That was my plan all along. These kids have better planning than the fucking NCAA. It's just absurd. Like, the kids went into the season saying that, right? There were some mm-hmm. kids saying, I don't know if this is the right place for me, but I'm going to give them one more shot. And now they can't jump in the portal because the NCAA's just didn't implement a plan that was well thought out. I mean, it's criminal to these college football players, but that's what the NCAA does. They commit crimes against college athletes. That's literally should be their company slogan. NCAA, we commit crimes and against college athletes and make a ton of money off of them.
And of all the issues that you and I have talked about with the NCAA, for them to pop out right now, we haven't heard or seen from them in how long, Zach?
Oh, like, God, I don't know.
There was all the Pitt USC stuff, and then they vanished. Of all the stuff to come back and screw these kids 2 weeks before, like basically when you're going to see the portal movement, it's like, no, there's so many bigger messes to clean up. Like, you're over here blowing the leaves. Like, the fucking house is burning down. You want to blow the leaves out of the driveway. Like, put the house fire out.
It's typical NCAA fashion. But yeah, mm-hmm. I was shocked when I read that last night. I was like, what? Like, what does that even mean? Like, you we're demanding that you withdraw your name. What if a kid says mm-hmm. no? Like, fuck you, no. I'm in the portal. Like, what are they going to do?
Exactly.
Is a kid ineligible now? They're talking Ooh. About, they're think about this now. They're talking about, they're going to roll out portal windows when kids mm-hmm. can transfer. So they need everyone to get out of the portal. It's like, well, you haven't rolled those out yet. So I'm allowed to be in the portal. What do you mean? Like,
exactly.
It's there's no legal backing. They can't do what they're doing. And if a kid wanted to sue the NCAA for trying to force him to remove his name from the portal, he would win that lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because essentially, like say a kid, like he's in the portal now and he's looking for another scholarship, Zach, because obviously when you enter the portal, the school that you're leaving no longer has to kind of honor your scholarship. Now, a lot of times they do. But if one of those 19 kids was in the portal, got their scholarship, whatever, and they were looking to sign with another school immediately, like in this kind of meantime, and get the scholarship back, it's like, no, they're just out of luck. So, yes, I mean, and the reason they're demanding it instead of just removing kids from the portal is because there is absolutely zero legal backing to this.
No, they can't do what they're doing, but mm-hmm. that's never stopped them before.
So I want to ask you, Zach, like, does college football need the NCAA? Like, do they still need the structure of the NCAA?
Because I mean, they need a governing body, but the NCAA needs imploded. It needs blown up and start over from scratch. That's how awful and incompetent that organization is. There needs to be a governing body, or else, as wild as this shit has been, if you remove the NCAA completely, you're going to have conference governance. And that means the SEC will have different rules from the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and the ACC. And that's just, there's no parity in college football. There's no consistency. And although there's kind of not now, it would just heighten things. And so you absolutely need a governance. You need a governing body. And it's just the way the NCAA is set up and the people making decisions are awful. They all need removed. Like, we need to vote them off the fucking island.
And this brings us back to the thing that makes the most fucking sense, and yet we still can't get there. NCAA football needs a commissioner.
Well, they need a commissioner that is elected by mm-hmm. the schools, right? We can't have Mark Emmert, some fucking douchebag who doesn't know anything about football or what's best for student athletes and coaches, up there making decisions with this collection of pencil pushers. We can't have that. You need to have a Gene Smith. You need to have, you know, someone that is competent and understands at the grassroots level, the ground floor, what these athletes need, what's best for them, and then what the coaches need and what's best for them. The AFCA, NCAA, it's all a joke.
Mm-hmm. It's all a joke, and it's frustrating to watch. And, you know, the transfer portal has added a certain element to college football. And for me personally, I don't think there should be transfer windows. I think you should just fuck it. Go in the portal whenever, because I enjoy the madness of it. Now, does it make sense logistically? Meh, maybe sometimes not. But, you know, it doesn't make sense. The NCAA demanding kids leave the portal after all they do is follow the rules that you set up. And like you said before the show, what's it fuck me for? Like, I didn't mess this up. NCAA did. Zach, I want to stay on the transfer portal just real briefly and talk about a school that has been kind of quote-unquote disrespected, according to their fan base and their coaching staff, the last week after their one-point win over Texas. Alabama. Now, yeah. Nick Saban has turned and used the portal more aggressively than any coach, you know, at that level of the kind of the peak schools, Georgia, mm-hmm. Alabama, you know, Clemson, Ohio State. They have used it to their advantage to go poach the elite players from smaller schools. They've done a good job at it. They've added guys like Gibbs. Obviously, they added Jameson Williams, you know, given that circumstance. Henry, I don't know how to say his last name, Toto, I believe.
Toa Toa.
Okay, there we go. And Elias Ricks.
Yeah.
And Jermaine Burton. So the danger with that is, Zach, is sometimes you don't always hit on all those kids. And this feels like at least a year where potentially – the transfer portal might have caught back up to Nick Saban a little bit. Now he's getting a chance to evaluate early. But what are your thoughts on those four guys? I don't even think Elias Ricks was at the game against Texas, that five-star corner that Ohio.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he has a bunch of issues, right? For a five-star all-everything at LSU, mm-hmm. transfers to Bama. Now he's not on the field. I mean, there was obviously red flags there, and kudos to Ryan Day for not entertaining that shit show because he caught a lot of heat for it, right? Why would you not want this five-star?
I was wrong.
Yeah, and I mean, if the kid can't see the field at Bama, he's not going to see the field at Ohio State. He must be a train wreck. But yeah, I mean, to your point, I think that the portal is a more fragile situation than recruiting because there's not as much time to do homework, background checks, like find out what happens, like what the kid's character's like, what is his work ethic like. All of a sudden, you just see a kid that on tape, you're like, that kid's a good player. Let's go get him out of the portal. And you bring him in, and it's like there's a complete unknown there that you vet that stuff in recruiting. 3 years recruiting a kid, you find that shit out when you're recruiting for 3 years in high school, right? And that's what this level of program does. Ohio State, when they get a kid to come to campus, they have gotten to know that kid, his family, his coaches, everyone in his entire social network for 3 years. So there's not a lot of unknown there. And if it is, it comes as a complete shock because of how much work you put into getting to know that kid. When you go in the portal, what do you got, like a couple weeks? You can't unturn or overturn all the rocks in that kid's life and find out the fiber of his character and what type of competitor he is. You just can't do it. So there's a higher likelihood that kid is going to be a miss. The only benefit you have a lot of times is college tape, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what schools go on. They don't know if a kid's a shitbag. They don't know if a kid is a lazy fucker. They just see film and they say, this kid's pretty talented. Like, he's a decent player. I think he could play for us. And then they go get him. And so that's why I think, you know, they hit on Jameson Williams and they might have missed on Eli Ricks because they just didn't do their homework. And you know what? They probably knew that and they didn't care. They're like, if he comes in and can't play or has a bunch of issues off the field, we don't need him that bad. We have these kids we recruited and one of them is going to have to play. It's viewed as more of an addition than a necessary take.
Yeah. And another part of that is like when you dig transfers, kind of the expectation from all around is that unlike freshmen, you expect them to play and play early and contribute. Now, the big one that I think is going to end up hurting them is it looks like that everybody else misevaluated Jermaine Burton, including myself. Jermaine Burton, you watch the tape. He does not look near the player we thought he could be for Alabama. And that, unlike the Ricks thing, is a position of we need that. Like, they need receiver play at that position. And so I think that can end up hurting them long term because, like, Zach, I don't know about you. I don't know if that kid can play. I don't know if that kid's good enough right now.
Yeah, we won't know until he's on the field, and he might not see the field. Yeah. But that's the risk you take.
Oh, no, Jermaine Burton, the wide receiver, the one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jermaine Burton. I watched the Texas game tape. That I actually am breaking that game down for our Patreon subscribers tonight, so it'll be out in the morning. The coach's film, but I watched it, and I think the kid's a good player, but he is not this all SEC receiver like he's being cracked up to be. Stetson Bennett and Kirby Smart were the issue, and he's actually Jameson Williams. He's not that. not through two games from what I've seen, because he's got an NFL quarterback, he's got an NFL offense, and he's just not showing up like people might have thought he would.
Yeah, so there we go. And then now for the first time, because you take these transfers, there is some vulnerability. Those three guys, Burton, Toa Toa, and Ricks were viewed as NFL guys. Toa Toa obviously was between Ohio State and Alabama, ended up going to Bama, and he didn't end up being a one-and-done player because he did struggle a little bit last year in coverage. And now Bama's running into an interesting spot. Now, again, long season. And the one thing from Nick Saban is that if you identify the fact that there is an issue early, a lot of times he'll have time to iron that out and fix that. Do you think that Alabama runs the table this year and remains undefeated, or is this the year where the transfers catch up to them and they lose one, maybe two?
It just comes down to you have faith in Nick Saban, the best coach that we've seen in our lifetime, to get, you know, the things that aren't clicking on all cylinders right. And it's tough to not think that he's going to get that done. Do I think they have a tough road test against Arkansas? Yes. Do I think Tennessee has a slim chance of upsetting the Crimson Tide? Yes. But I think the heavy odds-on favorite play here is that they go 12-0 and go to the SEC championship and match up with Georgia. I mean, that's the smart bettor's advice, right? That's probably the most likely scenario. But I could see either of those two teams catching them and stunning them in an upset.
I agree. And again, all eyes are on Alabama. Do you feel like Alabama's been disrespected this last week given the one-point win, or do you think it's kind of earned given the fact that they should have lost that game against Texas?
No, I mean, I think Texas played well. I think you got to credit Texas before you can just slam Alabama. I do think they struggle at skill. I mean, I think Bryce Young is out there with a mediocre wide receiver group, and I've said that over and over again. I do think that's their weakness on offense. They obviously have a stud in Jahmyr Gibbs. Bryce can make all the throws. He just doesn't have the skill group that they had last year or have had the past 5-6 years. And that's the chink in the armor right now. Can they develop a dynamic player in the perimeter? I mean, they have a bunch of five stars. So recruiting services say they've got the clay there. They just have to mold it, and they just haven't molded it yet.
If Holloman Wiggins called you and asked for help, would you help? And how much would it cost?
Sure. I'm a nice guy. I'll help.
Put a price on it.
Oh, I have no idea.
Mom said, if you're good at something, don't do it for free. Or at least that's what the Joker's mom said. So, you know, I don't know. We need a couple of these Super Chats, Zach, and then I want to talk about the one game we have. Actually, we have two breakdowns today, so you guys are in for a treat. Thank you, David, for the five. Is Toledo the best team Ohio State has played so far this season? They had Notre Dame on the ropes last year, for what that is worth.
It'll be interesting. We're going to break the game down tomorrow, but to say they're far behind Notre Dame would be just unfair and inaccurate. I don't know that they are as good. Despite Notre Dame, I know what's happened with Notre Dame. I know Marshall beat them. I know that Ohio State struggled a little bit against them, but beat them by 11, right? I know that stuff happened, but Notre Dame's still a more talented team than Toledo, for the most part. And so we'll do the full breakdown tomorrow, but I think there's a chance that this is the best football team. Maybe it's not the most talented team. Notre Dame's more talented, but it might be the best football team. And here's the thing about these MAC schools. You catch a talented MAC team, those kids, most of them are Ohio kids that didn't get recruited by Ohio State. So they go into this game and they have a little chip on their shoulder. They play a little harder because they want to show Ohio State and the country that they belonged at Ohio State, and Ohio State missed a diamond in the rough.
And I believe Dallas Gant transferred from Ohio State, one of the linebackers.
Oh, he did, yeah.
And now is playing for Toledo. And I know this means a lot for him. A little Fleazy, thank you for the five. I want to see Chip play running back since the linebacker room is full. Heard he's doing punt returns now, an average fan podcast. We'll talk about that.
It's interesting. I did hear that report last night. I think Jackson Smith and Jigba said it, and it makes complete sense, right? The kid was a running back at Arizona State, a hard runner, and you know, all reports are that he is – just looks like a tough guy to bring down on kickoff returns. And with the depth at receiver issues, I absolutely could see them trying to find another back. And with, I think that could have been an Evan Pryor role if he didn't get hurt. But now that he's obviously out for the year, they have their two running back system. They really have three wideouts. It looks they're in search of a return man. And it just shows you that whereas they had a Mecca Egbuka last year, right? Kind of that fourth or fifth wideout that was dynamic and they could throw back there. That kind of is an indictment on this freshman receiver class, that there's not anybody they want to put back there and trust with the ball. And they don't have a dynamic playmaker in that group.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that in a sec as well. Another super chat, like if it'll get up there. It's not putting it up there. Thank you, Nate, for the five. Does CJ get chewed out every week if he refuses to run the ball, or do coaches let it slide? I refuse to believe they can watch film and be satisfied.
No, I mean, I don't know about getting chewed out, but he's getting coached up through it, and he's getting shown. But at some point, it comes down to the confidence and mental makeup of your quarterback. You can't just dog cuss your quarterback for not running over and over again, or else you start to create a divide, right? You start to create a little dissension from that player, and you have to keep the quarterback on board above all. So they talk about leadership and being the quarterback as much as they talk about his need to scramble. And like I said, I've said before, at some point, the kid's just not going to do it. And you just have to accept that, because he's still the best chance you have to win the game at quarterback.
Fair. No, I agree. And that's kind of what you've been echoing the entire time. Our guy Elks. Elks, man, always has the nuggets, dude. I love Elks. Thank you for the five. Fun fact, last year, Clay Helton was fired by USC week two. This year, Clay Helton leads Georgia Southern into Lincoln and gets Frost fired week two. What a guy.
Hey, revenge tour. That was a real revenge tour.
Yeah, definitely some legitimate revenge. Last one before we start getting into the game breakdowns. Our guy Vince. Thank you for the five. My Iowa Hawkeye friends are fed up with OC Brian Ferentz. What does Iowa have to do with the offense and Kirk's future?
He has to fire his son. I mean, that's just what he's got to do. I mean, he made the nepotism hire there to bring his son on as the offensive coordinator. The guy clearly is inept, and he has to fire his son now. And that's the risk you take. Or he's just got to die on the Titanic, sink with it, right? He's got to sink with his son so that he doesn't have to go to Thanksgiving in 5 years knowing that he fired his kid. I mean, I don't know that I could ever do that, right? I know I could never fire my kid. I know that for a fact. I don't know that I would hire my kid. I might help him get jobs other places, but I don't know that I could hire him because of that pressure. What if he doesn't perform? Then you as the CEO, you have to fire him. That being said, the cameos about Brian Ferentz are the funniest things I've ever seen. And I mentioned it yesterday. They're hilarious. You just got to search Twitter for them. I mean, they're getting celebrities to make these cameos unbeknownst to them about Brian Ferentz. And it's fucking pure comedy.
It is. It is comedy. Hey, but Zach, we titled it like this. Let's talk about it. Is the U back? Let us know in the comment section what you think. We appreciate that.
Is the U back? That is the question for the comments. And while you type that comment, I want to mention our partner, MyBookie. They have given us a special week here. So you need to go sign up this week at mybookie.ag. They're doing a double deposit match. The Chiefs, I think the Chiefs play the Chargers. Is that right?
I believe so. I agree with Pat Mahomes.
It is Chiefs Chargers Thursday night, AFC matchup. Go place a bet on it on MyBookie, promo code Menace. And I'm going to give you our two picks, two college football picks for MyBookie. Go over to MyBookie, get that free double money. You put $250 in, you get $500. These are my two plays for the week. USF and UF under 60. I think USF's a bad football team, and I don't think AR-15 can throw it well enough to put up enough points to hit the over 60 points. So I'm taking the under 60 points in that game. And then Akron plays Tennessee. As good as I think Tennessee is, I had to throw this one on there because this is a strong play for me. And Chris is a 3-3-0 guy. I'm taking Akron plus 47.5 against the UT Vols, the Tennessee Volunteers. Go lock those in on MyBookie right now. Promo code Menace, mybookie.ag, free double deposit match. You put in $200, they'll give you $400 free dollars to gamble. What more could you ask for? So head over to MyBookie, the official sports book of Menace to Sports.
Go Zips.
Go Zips.
Hey, but look, before we get to the next topic, our guy's back. MVP of the...
Yes, King Bronco in the building. Let's read it for you. Nah, you try to be like old days too much time to and ain't even broaded in hots, but want to shriek about the squirrel some. Ain't any cat jailers on that side. Want to have cream cats when beans was out. I want him on the payroll. Yeah. King Bronco needs to be on the payroll. What the hell did you just say, brother?
DM good one of us.
Lord.
I want him and Ed Orgeron just to sit down and just talk.
I want him to talk. I want him on the show.
Someone said he's high, Zach. This is his rebuttal.
I did atch drugs, then anything could survive. Well, we know you've done some drugs, King Bronco. If you're not on them right now, you French fried your fucking brain. That's all I know.
Not the beans being out. Not the beans. All right, Zach, the U, man. Miami, Texas A&M. Obviously, Texas A&M had the bad loss last week. App State. Jimbo Fisher spent $31 million, $32 million. It's well documented that this was supposed to be a championship-level team. It clearly is not. They had the big quarterback battle. They said, we can win with all three quarterbacks. Obviously, not with Haynes King. We could have told you that. Zach, how much pressure is on Jimbo Fisher in this game? What are your initial thoughts after giving it a good, hard study?
Well, I think this is a must-win for Jimbo. He loses this game, he's done. It's over. It's kaput. Like, he's gone. And when you look at this, you look at the real matchup here. Here's the key to the game. The key to the game is, can Tyler Van Dyke have a career day? He has to have a career day. I went back and watched him against Southern Miss. He threw the ball extremely well. He had one ill-advised pick. He missed on a corner route, and the safety jumped it. But other than that, and Southern Miss was winning in the second quarter. It was 7-3. And so I watched him throw the ball, and I think he has the chance to be really, really good. Outside of that one throw, he played that game outstanding. He was dicing him up down the field. I mean, he launches the ball down the field. He's really good on deep balls. But you look at Texas A&M's defense. The one thing that Texas A&M has done well through two games is their pass defense has been outstanding. They've only allowed 7 passes over 10 yards through two games. That's 3.5 a game. That leads the SEC, right? They've only allowed 5 runs past 10 yards, which is also very strong. Their strength is their defense, specifically their pass defense, and Miami's strength is their throwing offense, their pass offense. So that's the key to the game. Can Miami throw the ball on Texas A&M? That's what Mario Cristobal has to get done, right? Because Texas A&M, where they have been abysmal, is offensive explosion. They don't have explosive plays. Their quarterback play has been average as shit. Haynes King is not a championship caliber quarterback. They only have 6 runs over 10 yards. They only have 16 passes over 10 yards, which for a team with their schedule, what they've played, that's abysmal. I mean, it's the second worst in the SEC. The only team that's worse is Mizzou. And the reality is Texas A&M's killed themselves with turnovers, right? They also only have 1 trip in the red zone in those two games. And Miami on the other side of the ball has relied on a stout rushing defense. So I think that presents problems for Texas A&M because Miami's strength on defense is stopping the run. So Texas A&M is going to have to throw the ball with Haynes King to win this football game. And Tyler Van Dyke has played outstanding. I mean, 82% adjusted completion percentage, 456 yards in 2 games. I mean, I think, honestly, I'm leaning Miami on in this game. I think that that Mario Cristobal needs to get this signature win. And to answer the question we had for the chat, I don't believe it means the U is back just because they beat Texas A&M. Certainly if Texas A&M beat App State, that the fan base would be claiming that. But I think Miami goes into this game, steals a win, and is on the right trajectory to bringing Miami back.
How much pressure do you think there is on Mario to win this game? Because I feel like now that A&M lost, not pressure isn't like getting fired pressure, but pressure is, shoot, this is now a team we should be able to kind of walk through.
Pressure on Mario because this win would be a signature win and an indication that the program is going in the right direction. If he loses the game, it's not going to be an utter disappointment, and they're not going to be looking at him saying, "Oh man, he's not the guy for this job," right? But if he gets the win, it'll be the magnitude of the momentum he'll get from that in recruiting, with boosters, with the alumni, with his current team and their confidence level, their swagger. It's such an opportunity to hit for him that if he doesn't seize that opportunity and Miami doesn't win the game, it's a missed opportunity. And that's kind of where it lies. That's where it ends. It's not necessarily a pressure cook must win game, but it's just such a great opportunity for him to beat the recruiting, crowned recruiting champion, right? Who has weaknesses. It's a chance for Mario to get a signature win and really get ramp the program up into a new trajectory.
At this point, is Jimbo Fisher who we thought he was? Like, is it become clear to you or I that he's not going to be the coach to get this Texas A&M team over the hump?
Absolutely. I mean, it all comes back to his offense and his quarterback play. And I get it. He had Jameis Winston, who is somewhat of a generational arm talent, and he won a national championship. That's great. That was also fucking, 9 years ago? 9 years ago, he won a national championship. Jeez. Offense has evolved a ton in 9 years. His hasn't. So I don't think Jimbo's a guy that can get it done. Obviously, they did a great job organizing NIL and recruiting a class. But, I mean, I honestly credit the boosters and the NIL directives for getting that done. So I definitely don't. I'm not a Jimbo fan. I don't think he's a guy that's going to win a national championship or even win the SEC. I don't think he's going to win the SEC West in his entire tenure.
It's crazy, Zach, because like they did all that work to set up the boosters and the slush fund. When Jimbo gets fired, none of that goes away. So that's going to become an incredibly attractive job if and when Jimbo gets fired, because the booster support's already there. The money's already in a fund. They just need someone at the helm that can develop these kids.
Zach, and I'm going to call it right now, Chris. The rivalry will reunite, and Texas A&M goes after Urban Meyer to slay the beast that is Nick Saban. Because if anyone has slayed Nick Saban, it is Urban Meyer. He has done it before, twice. I'm calling Urban Meyer to Texas A&M.
Is that their first call, you think?
Phone call.
Ooh.
What do you think? Tell me in the chat. What do you think? You think
that Urban's would be the first scary. Phone
call? Could you see Urban Meyer? I mean, Texas A&M facilities, financial backing, NIL, everything is set up for massive success. And if there's one coach who's proven he can deliver immediate results, it's Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer will be the next head coach at Texas A&M.
If the talent's there, he's going to maximize it, and the talent's going to be there according to the recruiting rankings. I mean, we saw inside the top 100, they were getting freaking everybody. And really, obviously, like you've talked about Urban style being conducive to kind of short runs, like 3 and 4 year runs rather than like 6 and 7 year runs. It's like, holy, like
the only thing he has to do when he gets there is get DJ Uiagalelei out of the portal. That's it. Just think about it. Urban comes in, gets DJ out of the portal. Texas A&M is an instant national championship contender.
That would be absurd. That would be so absurd. Zach, I want to ask you about psychology of teams after bad losses. This A&M team, obviously, they just lost to App State. They're more talented than App State. They're more talented to me than Miami, given like the composite and the roster.
Yeah.
Do teams, when they go through those bad losses, is it more of a quit afterwards, or is it more of proving that that will never happen again? What do you expect to see from this A&M team?
I mean, this A&M team, they had a bad loss. We know that, right? They beat Sam Houston State, who they were supposed to. Then they lose to App State. So right now, they're pissed off, and this team's angry, and they're trying to come out and make a statement that was just a fuck-up. That was just a mistake, right? It was a bad day. They lost a game they shouldn't have lost, but they're actually for real. So they're angry right now and bought in and just out to prove to the country that they are still a relevant team, right? The problem will lie in if they lose this one. That's where you'll see kids start to question coaches, see kids start to develop a negative culture. And that's where a program can take a really drastic turn away from where they're trying to head. So this is a must win for Jimbo Fisher and this Texas A&M football team, because if they lose this game, you're going to start seeing little cracks in the windshield of this program.
Do you think they have a culture issue right now? Like, obviously, like all the grumblings about the players wanting to leave, that video of Denver Harris in the garage, or is that kind of just like kids, you know, students?
I mean, I don't think there's a culture issue yet. I mean, a kid driving fast in a parking garage, as dumb as it was, and as much as I think he needs to get backhanded, that's not a culture indication. That's a kid making a dumbass decision to speed through a parking garage. We don't need to overanalyze something like that. I don't think there's a culture issue right now. I mean, obviously there's somewhat of a culture issue. They lost to App State, but I don't think it's a cancerous culture that will implode under Jimbo until they lose one more. When they lose this next game, if they lose to Miami, I think it is full on implosion.
Their next four games, Zach: Miami, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Bama.
I mean, that could be four. Holy cow. You imagine they lose those four games. Whew. They lose to Miami, they might go 0-4 in those games, start off 1-5 in Jimbo's. I mean, he'll probably get fired long before they get through that four game stretch.
That is a dangerous four game stretch with some facing some good coaches, Zach. Like, that's the part of it. It's like not just like good teams, but well coached teams. And obviously, the coaching advantage, given what we saw on Saturday, is not in Jimbo's favor. Do you have a score prediction? You think it's going to be an ugly game, like 17-14 type game? Or you think there's going to be some points?
I don't have a score prediction. I think Miami wins a close game. I think Texas A&M is going to play much better than they played last week. But I think I always look at it. I know I'm a former football coach, so I always look at the coaches, right? I think Miami has talent. I think A&M has more talent. But I have faith in Mario Cristobal as a football coach and running a program far greater than any faith I would have in Jimbo Fisher. So I'm taking Mario Cristobal to out-coach Jimbo Fisher, and Miami wins a close game.
I believe you. Now, I do want to ask, just while we're on A&M, what is that thing that they do before home games?
It's embarrassing, whatever it is.
I see clips of it once a year, and it's like...
it's like some douchebag frat boys grabbing their nuts, and it's not even funny. Like, it's incredibly insulting and a bad look.
You know what it's called? I have no clue what it's called.
I forget what it's called. I did read about it, but it's... I mean, it's like... It's like sexist jokes. Like, you're not supposed to laugh at sexist jokes, right? That's bad, right? You're supposed to respect women or really any hot button topic. But the jokes can still be funny. They're just offensive, right? They're telling jokes that are offensive and not funny. Like, I don't know who decides who gets that microphone, but those kids are not funny. Nothing about that was funny. There wasn't anything they said that was funny. Mm-mm.
So it's called awful. The Texana Midnight Yell or whatever.
It's awful. I mean, it's not only is it a bad look, politically incorrect, and just stupid. It's not funny. It's not entertaining.
It's just embarrassing. Like it's the fact that it's, I don't know. It looked so bad. All right, Zach, the other game with the coach that was formerly on the hot seat and now he's gone. Now Mickey Joseph wants the job. Nebraska is taking on OU. You called this an upset at the beginning of the year. I think so. I'm willing to die on that hill. Will I be with or without you on that hill?
Well, here's the thing. I think Nebraska wins this game. And there's not a lot of analytics to back that. But I went back this morning and watched the Kent State-Oklahoma game. And understand, that game was 3-0 Kent State with 26 seconds left in the first half. Kent State. And you need to cut that game on, because this kid from Kent State, this quarterback, Schley, his name is Schley, he's a fucking baller. Dynamic runner, threw the ball well. And... He diced them up in the first half. They had no answer for him. So I think Nebraska has a chance here. Now, there's not a lot of things I've seen on film to make me believe that Nebraska's capable of doing it. I mean, their defense is horrific. And I highlighted it before and I'll highlight it again. 30 pass plays over 10 yards. The worst in the Big Ten, 123rd in the NCAA, in all of college football. They give up passes like a motherfucker. So... Dylan Gabriel looks to have a career day. They also have 16 run plays over 10 yards, which is also the worst in the Big Ten, and 119th in college football. Fire Scott Frost all you want. The defense has been the problem for Nebraska. That's how they lost to Georgia Southern. That's how they lost to Northwestern. The defense is the issue. So I'm not really validating why I think Nebraska will win the game, because Nebraska's defense is pathetic. And so they hire their receiver coach to be the interim head coach. I guess I'm just calling on ghosts of football upset pass and asking them to rally this team around this interim head coach, who is this player's coach, and just give win one for the Gipper type of game and pull this one out. Because I do think Oklahoma is fraudulent. I do. I don't think Oklahoma is as good as people want to give them credit for. So I'm calling the upset. I think Nebraska wins the game.
It's crazy because like Nebraska, I think, has a talented roster. We've talked about it before. They have players, obviously Marcus Washington, Casey Thompson. Like, for Oklahoma to be going into halftime 3-0 against Kent, like, that's like a sign of belief. Like, if this game is close, going up to that and ending the first half, and you have a talented team with a belief system and with a coach that wants this job, that would be unbelievable. And you would have to kind of feel like this game could be close. Now, this is kind of a rivalry of sorts. I know it's a, Big 12, Big 10, but given the history, Zach, I think this is going to be a really close game. Like, I would not be surprised if this was a 3-point game, a 4-point game going into the final minutes. And I think it's funny because people are talking about us saying, there's no way. We just watched Texas take Alabama down to the wire. Like, the talent gap, because of the transfer portal and depth things, is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And all you need is that little bit of belief. Yeah.
There's no doubt. Here's why I would not bet on Nebraska to win the game. I'm certainly not telling you to take the Nebraska money line. It's just a gut feeling that I think it just feels like it should happen. But never in a game do you bet against a team that has the better defense and a better quarterback. Dylan Gabriel is better than Casey Thompson, and Oklahoma's defense is better than Nebraska's. So there's no inclination or reason that Nebraska will win this game. Oklahoma is the better football team. Oklahoma should win this game. I'm just going gut feeling on this one for no reason at all. I mean, honestly, there's, I watched the film. I looked at the analytics. I studied the shit out of both teams. There's no reason Nebraska should win this game. Oklahoma should roll Nebraska in this game. I'm just going gut feeling on it.
How is Oklahoma secondary if you have it in front of you?
Like, do they have, like, I don't have individual... it in front of me. Okay. I mean, just, they haven't been tested. I mean, they haven't played anyone. They look decent, but I you know, I'm skeptical. And I don't know that. I mean, I think Marcus Washington is the best receiver they've faced. And I do think, I mean, Texas A&M has a true star at receiver. I think Marvin Mims Jr. is a fucking playmaker. Yeah. He's explosive. He is really good.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just am curious because I know Mark Whipple, kind of his track record everywhere he's gone, is to just isolate the one mismatch on the outside that he could take advantage of and then abuse it to shit, to kind of game wrecker. It's like when you play Madden, Zach, you run the same like three plays with the same player and just kind of take over games like that.
Yeah.
And we saw last year, like when you went through and evaluated Jordan Addison's tape, what did Mark Whipple do? He would move him around and just pick on you.
Threw it to that sumbitch every play. Mm-hmm. And so I think, I honestly think, and I know I'm biased, but I think Marcus Washington is that guy for them in Nebraska. And you saw it last week, even though they lost, he got targeted some more. He had more catches, more of an impact. And I think he's going to grow in his role in that offense with Mark Whipple. So I think that's the entire key to the game right there. If Nebraska's going to win, they need Marcus Washington to just absolutely go off.
And that's your big underdog win of the week. Is that what you got?
Based on nothing intelligent.
It's a, what do they say? Addition by subtraction. Like as soon as Scott Frost leaves, maybe this team turns into the Nebraska we thought they would be. And I do want to say, no, I mean, they could still win the big, the, never mind. I don't even want to.
What are you, I mean, the Big Ten West is awful.
Yeah, that's what
anybody
I'm saying.
Could win it. They still, I mean, Minnesota is the best team in the Big Ten West by far right now.
PJ Fleck.
Fucking PJ Fleck. I will look forward to breaking that game down. Ohio State versus PJ Fleck.
Ohio State versus Fleck. That's freaking disgusting. A couple of super chats. Tom, thank you for the five. Will Ohio State put Transfer Chip back at running back for depth? What do you think, Zach?
I mean, I think there's a chance because they have their two backs. He's going to be the third back, and he hasn't really found that role on the defensive side of the ball yet. But the play here is not this year, right? It is, does he make an impact in the linebacker room next year, right? It does, or do you need him to give you that depth at running back? I mean, I don't know the answer to that yet, but let that sumbitch catch a couple kickoffs and break a couple tackles and show you that he could do something with the ball in his hands. I got a feeling they might just flop him right back over to the offensive side of the ball.
And he was a high level division one running back, and we wanted him coming out of high school, Zach. I don't know if you remember that. Yeah. But obviously, like, the stuff that went down out west kind of got him. Zach, couple of Ohio State notes and then some super chats before we get on out of here, now that we kind of predicted both those games. I want you to plug the film room one more time just because, again, I've watched it again and it has meant a lot for me.
Listen, it's helpful. It's really simple. If you want to learn college football at a deeper level, you want to have a more intimate experience in college football, I have access to coaches' film, all 22 film. I already put out the Ohio State offense versus Notre Dame. Today, I'm doing Alabama's offense versus Texas. I will get to the defensive side of the ball next week. And every week, I'm going to put out two videos that is just, it's going to be an hour long. It's going to be you and me sitting in a meeting room breaking down film. So you can, one, see shit you can't see on TV, and two, learn from somebody that at the worst knows something about college football. In most cases, I know more than anyone else on TV. Or maybe not anyone else, but the majority of people telling you about football. So come hang out. The link's right below Chris. It's in the bio, patreon.com/menacetosports. The Colonel tier or higher, $20 or higher, you get access to the coaches' film sessions. I already have three on there. It's worth it. I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. As someone who's
the feedback's been unbelievable. I mean, there's been a shitload of people sign up, and all of them are like, "Wow, this was worth every penny." I would have paid more for this. That's been the feedback.
And you guys know, I mean, a lot of people know, Zach, I obviously didn't come from the football world. I'm from the media world, and kind of me transitioning and learning more about football. It's been super helpful. And now I can go in Twitter spaces and educate other people about football a little bit. I mean, Zach's unlocked a weapon here, and I think everyone should absolutely be using it. Zach, I don't want to break down Ohio State Toledo, but I do want to talk about a couple things just before we get on out of here. We got Toledo, obviously. Is it weird that it's a night game, 7:30 at the Shoe?
It's annoying. For everyone. For us, yeah. I mean, except for the fans. Fans love it because they get to drink all day, party all night. But for coaches, for the players, for us, people that do a post-game reaction show like we will on Saturday, it's fucking annoying. Like, why are we playing this game at night? This should be a noon game, home by four. But I guess anything for Big Ten Network to kick some ratings up.
Mm-hmm. The good old noon snooze fest. Now, this is the first time in I don't know how many years, Zach, three of our first four games have been night home games.
Well, it's very clear what Ohio State decided, right? They don't give a shit about the old fans. They are doing this for recruiting atmosphere. Now, they certainly didn't pick the Toledo game to be a night game, but Gene Smith and Ryan have been pushing these sports media entities to try to give them more night games, especially early in the season when it's not freezing cold. Because that's what's not discussed a lot, is night games in fucking November are frigid, freezing cold. But in September, they're gorgeous. So they're pushing for early night games for recruiting, for atmosphere. It's just, and the players love them. They love night games. The only thing that sucks of a night game is they can't go to the bar or the club afterwards because by the time they get out of there, the places are closing. So it's absolutely a push by Ohio State to get these early night games while it's still warm.
And additionally, it really helps recruiting in terms of traveling. Like when games start at noon, a lot of kids can't get up. And there is, I detailed on Chris's corner today, there's a trio of Florida wide receivers that are coming up for the Toledo game. And that would never, ever happen.
No, you can't catch a flight early enough to get there. And if you do, you get there right at noon at kickoff. You don't spend any time with the coaches.
Mm-hmm. So a couple of notes, and I want to get your thoughts on it. First of all, what are you looking to see from Ohio State? What unit are you going to be paying close attention to, Ohio State versus Toledo this weekend?
I want to see the wideouts go off. Mm-hmm. I mean, against Georgia Southern, against Arkansas State, they look better. But yeah. I want to see the wideouts go off. Now, they're saying Jackson Smith and Jigba is going to be back and healthy. Julian Fleming should be available. I want to see these wideouts show us that they're the best wideout group in the country, because all offseason, they were touted as such. And it just hasn't shown up yet. Yeah. Marvin Harrison Jr. had his coming out party last week. I want to see him replicate that success again. And ultimately, all eyes on CJ Stroud. I want to see CJ Stroud take over a game early, get out of the game by halftime. And like I said last week, I want to see Devin Brown. That's who I want to see. I want to see Devin Brown go take some snaps and see how good he is as a true freshman. On the defensive side of the ball, I mean, everyone's going to be all eyes on Denzel Burke. Can mm-hmm. he bounce back? Can he dominate a game against a lesser opponent? And it's going to be interesting to see what this Toledo team does to attack Ohio State, because I think they feel like they might have a shot at shocking the world here. And so we'll break down Toledo and everything about this team tomorrow. But that's what I'm looking for in this game. I want to see CJ Stroud level up against a lesser inferior opponent. I want to see these receivers dominate. And then I want to see Denzel Burke bounce back. And outside of that, the only other thing I'm begging, asking, wishing, and praying is to see Trevion Henderson in space.
Do you think Denzel Burke is becoming dangerously close to being, quote unquote, the mark? Like if he has
He is the mark because of the defensive scheme. The safeties are playing well, and Cameron Brown is cornerback one. So he's always going to be the targeted defensive back in this defense. I think we can't just hold one bad game over his head as if he's a bust or if he is truly a SETI or a mark. I think he is going to be targeted the most because he is the lesser of all evils for an opposing offense. But I think there's a chance that he thrives being targeted.
Given the fact that JSN is, to me, already a proven entity, how much would you have him out there, or would you kind of just get him out there a couple routes and then kind of bring him in even before half to get a guy like Fleming out there? Because, Zach, I'm ready to see what we have in Fleming.
I really hope he's a game-time decision that they pull him out of the game. I don't see any reason why you would play him in this game. He had a hamstring issue. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a soft tissue issue. It's not like he had a bruised arm. I mean, this is something that can get re-injured if you rush him back too fast. And I know they have medical staff and medical personnel that are evaluating that. But I see no gain in him playing in this game at all. I would absolutely love the fact to see him on the sidelines in, you know, sweats cheering on his team. But Julian Fleming needs all the reps. If he's healthy, he needs to play the entire game.
Given Fleming's skill set, Zach, where do you think he fits into an offense? Like, is that a guy? Cause I think it's simple. Like putting him in the slot and letting him run drags is kind of where I'll try to manufacture him touches. But again, that's not me being a schematic mind. That's me being, okay, he's an athlete. He's big. He's fast. how can we get him touches? Because the way they've been doing it for the last 2 years, it really hasn't worked. Additionally, he hasn't been healthy or running great routes. How can you get a guy touches that maybe doesn't run the best routes, but you know he's dynamic with the ball in space?
Well, I mean, there's ways you can do it, right? Screens, there's certain routes, like you mentioned, drags, swing screens. They do all these RPOs, bubbles, now screens, all this shit. They can get guys the ball in space without being great route runners or without being a guy that's, you know, a dynamic pass receiver in a route structure. So there's 100 ways to do it, and they already do most of them. So it's just a matter of them emphasizing it and wanting to get him the touches.
Can you call Ryan Day and tell him that we want to bring jet sweeps back?
I can. I mean,
we haven't run a single we haven't run a single one this year.
I don't know. I mean, maybe Emeka is a jet sweep runner, but you got to have that game breaker speed. I mean, Paris Campbell was a jet sweep runner. Curtis Samuel was a jet sweep runner. Those guys were elite speed and acceleration players. I don't know that we have that at receiver. We have guys that can run really well and they run well running routes and things like that. I don't know if we have a player that is just dynamic burst to take a speed sweep 80 yards like we watch Paris Campbell do or Curtis Samuel do in their career at Ohio State.
I mean, we watched them do it with Garrett Wilson last year. Does it make sense to put a guy like Trayvon Henderson maybe out wide for a quick sec to just run him a sweep, or does that not make a ton of sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. It's just you can get into the schematics of it. You need a lead blocker, so that would be where you had to get in a two-back set, which I would love to see Ohio State do. Put Mayan as the lead back and give a push sweep to Trayvon, and then there's so much you can do off play action because that would be such a dangerous play. That whole jet sweep package can be extremely dynamic if you have a dynamic jet sweep runner. And I think Trey could be that for sure, to your point.
Mm-hmm. That was just my question on that. I do think it's interesting, Zach. The signs potentially point that the wide receiver room is a little bit thinner than we would have thought. You kind of referenced that earlier in the show. A couple of things that kind of came out of the press conference yesterday. Chip returning kicks, which I think would be interesting. It was interesting hearing Emeka and Jax kind of talk about him and say that whenever he creases one, he's gone. No one can catch him.
Right. I love that shit, but it's the scout kickoff team. They don't let scholarship players on the scout kickoff team. Like, it's like the number one scout team that you only have like the walk-ons. All the walk-ons are on it because they run 100 sprints in a row. And I mean, by the time Chip Trainum is in there catching the kick, that might be that kickoff team's fourth dead sprint down the field. And it's like, great, man. By the way, almost every kickoff return goes to the house against the scout kickoff team. That's not impressive.
Does it really?
Oh, absolutely it does.
That's comedy.
So, and you're not allowed to tackle. You can't full tackle a scout kickoff team. You'll get somebody hurt. So it's hilarious that it's being reported that way. And I'm not saying the kid might be a great kickoff returner, but it's like, that's no indication that he's going to be one. Every kickoff return against the scout team goes to the house.
That is funny. Additionally, it feels like we're going to see some freshman receivers this week. One of the guys that I really like, Kojo, lost his black stripe this morning. Zach, do guys losing their black stripes right before games, is that like a sign, okay, we're going to give you a bone, let you play?
Maybe. It can be. I mean, the game has to go the right way, though. I mean, you can't.
Yeah. It just seems like sometimes it's so convenient. Like last year, like we were having corner issues, then immediately Legend Cavazos loses his stripe. It's like you know, when shit like that happens, it's like, okay, like we have wide receiver depth. All of a sudden, Kojo lost his stripe. Like he's ready.
That's what happens, right? I've said it before. The black stripe is a tool to motivate and coach, right? That's what it is. So if you see a kid that's teetering on maybe becoming a player, you rip that black stripe off. He might elevate his game. He gets a little more confidence. Like he's excited. He's engaged, and it's that small victory that gets him over the hump. And so it's absolutely a motivation tool, and that is not by accident that he lost his stripe with a need for depth at receiver. That's not by accident at all. And it doesn't mean that he's ready to provide that depth. It might just be that he's the closest one to it, and they want to try to bump him over the edge and get him in that conversation.
If all four receivers are healthy, Fleming, Marvin Harrison, JSN, and Emeka, what spot do you believe Fleming would play at the most? Like X, Y, or the slot, out of curiosity?
I don't think he's a good enough player to take away touches from Emeka Egbuka or Marvin Harrison Jr. or Jackson Smith and Jigba. So he'd have to be the Swiss Army knife receiver for me if I was still coaching wideouts, and he'd have to be able to play all three positions, and he would have to get plugged in wherever we needed him to. But I would never steal a touch from those other threes and give it to him unless it just happened because the kid was blown out, tired, needed a sub.
Okay. That's fair. I just thinking about that and a little bit about Jaden Ballard as well, who, to your point, you put it on tape a couple times. He's a better blocker than we thought.
He's the best blocker in the room. You watched that Notre Dame game, and I broke it down in the coach's film session. People, I saw on Twitter, of course, I read stuff on Twitter, which is stupid, but somebody said Jaden Ballard's a fast kid, but he can't block and not a good route runner. I'm like, time out now. He's the best blocker this room has. I mean, we haven't seen Jackson Smith and Jigba this year do much, but he was the best blocking receiver in the Notre Dame game. I mean, he blocked his ass off. So that's just untrue. That's just a fan take on a kid who they think is young and immature. He blocked well.
Yeah. No, I was happy to see that. And then also, I think G did a really good job blocking. I think he needs to be a part of the offense moving forward. The fact the wide receiver room is so thin, I just like don't see how you don't get G Scott in the game. He's just too talented. Yeah. And a guy that's more positive, a route runner. Want to get a super chat up here before we get out of here, Zach, if that is okay. Michael Chaffin, thank you for the two. Imagine being a linebacker taking kicks back in the 90s.
That just shows you the evolution of football, right? Like, imagine Andy Katzenmoyer back there returning kickoffs.
Sheesh. It is crazy. Like, the linebackers all said that he's the fastest of the linebacker group.
You say that, like, at the same time, I'd put Ryan Shazier or Darren Lee back there to return kicks. Those some bitches are sub 4.4. Big ass dudes that can run.
And you know, nobody wants to tackle a big dude running full speed like
that. No one wants to tackle Ryan Shazier. Are you kidding me? Big dude like that running the way he ran?
If he had hands, you put him back there? That would have been fucking crazy.
Absolutely. That would have been awesome. People don't know, like, I ran pump block. Ryan Shazier was the one guy who, I mean, he was one of my top pump blockers. Him and Bradley Roby were the most explosive guys on the team.
Mm-hmm. I love Bradley Roby. He's my favorite Buckeye there for a little while. All right, Zach, I got nothing else left for today's show. You got anything else you want to hit before we get on out of here?
No, just make sure you go check out my bookie. And as I mentioned before, Prize Picks. If you're into that fantasy football world, you can put money on fantasy numbers and stats, and you can parlay them all together with some pretty big payouts. So we're bringing our lead handicapper on, our prop handicapper, tomorrow. So go to Prize Picks, sign up, you get a deposit match with the promo code Menace, and then take what the Mensa tells you tomorrow. He was fucking 4-0 last week. His track record is incredible. So just take his picks, and you can pick a couple of them, or you could just parlay all of them, because he sweeps all the time. And if he sweeps, you'll make a shitload of money on Prize Picks. So go to Prize Picks, download the app, promo code Menace, sign up, get a free deposit match, and have fun with a little bit of fantasy football. So check both of those out for me. Also, our coach's film session, as I keep telling you, that is out. If you don't want to pay for it, go watch the free video. I put out an 8-minute clip from that coach's film session, the hour-long session, and it's on YouTube right now. Go to it. You can watch 8 minutes of me breaking down some film. So go check those out. I appreciate everybody. Menace out.